Daniel, chapter 4, and why don't I start perhaps at the end, as films often do. They start at the end of the person's life. Well, I'm going to do that. So verse 34. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. Then looking on to verse 37, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. And that's the last we ever hear of King Nebuchadnezzar. That took place in this church a few years ago, the baptism of a member of the Communist Party. He was a journalist by profession, middle-aged, and I baptized him on May Day, a significant day for him. It was a very emotional moment, I recall. And he told us in church, hundreds and hundreds of us here, that all his life he'd been working for a political kingdom, another kingdom. And he said he'd come to the point of his own decision to be a Christian, where he wanted to demonstrate that he was now a member of another kind of kingdom altogether, an eternal kingdom that would be forever. And that from now on he was pledging himself, his energies, his abilities to that kingdom and to a new king. And I baptized him, and with that it was a very emotional moment. He embraced me, and I think those of us who were there will never forget that moment. Another kingdom. And that man became a leader in our Christianity Explained discussion group. It's been happening all down the years of spiritual experience. Somebody comes up against another kingdom, an authority that is bigger than the structures built around the throne of personal ambition and aptitudes, resulting in a change of mindset and loyalties and an acknowledgement of a new kingship that is now in charge. This particular episode, narrated for us earlier in Daniel chapter 4, happened over 25 centuries ago. Daniel, the talented young Hebrew, together with three of his close companions, had been taken captive in 605 BC in the first of three deportations from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. It's the home of modern Iraq. Readers of the Bible are probably familiar with the story of the attempt by Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful man in the world, at a form of ethnic cleansing, outlined for us in chapter 1 of Daniel, as a selection of choice Hebrews was introduced to the ways of the Babylonian court. And then of the famous four's rejection of Nebuchadnezzar's menus in favor of a fiber diet, of their survival amid the intrigues that surrounded them, and of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and their deliverance from Nebuchadnezzar's burning fiery furnace into which they'd been flung when they refused the worship of the golden statue that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. But it was Daniel's earlier interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream that caused the young man's rapid promotion in the alien Babylonian kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar had dreamt of a gigantic image compressed into a large, many people think that it may have been an image of himself, made of four metals, the head of gold, the torso and arms of silver, the trunk and thighs of brass, and the legs and feet of iron and clay. An imposing statue that, in the dream, was shattered to pieces by an incoming hurtling rock cut by no human hand, the stone eventually growing into a mountain that filled the whole earth. And you, O King Nebuchadnezzar, pronounced the inspired prophet Daniel, you are the head of gold. This is your moment on the world stage. It's Babylon's turn. But, he went on, all too soon, three other great kingdoms are going to follow you in succession. And the identity of the second and third kingdoms is given in Daniel chapter 8, verses 20 and 21, as being Medo-Persia and Greece. And of course, history has confirmed that that is exactly what took place. Babylon, then in came the Medes and Persians, then in came the Greek Empire. It's only Rome that it's not identified in the scriptures as the fourth kingdom, but of course, that was the fourth one that followed. And the stone that became a mountain, why, it's a kingdom set up by God, and it will never be destroyed, comes the interpretation of the book of Daniel. It will preside over the downfall of every kingdom in sight, said the prophet in Daniel 2, 44 and 45, and it is going to last forever. That's the background to our little study now. First, the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and then the dramatic episode of the burning fiery furnace. This was building up in Nebuchadnezzar's mind. I'm in contact with, I'm up against something that is different. Something that can survive even my rule. The warning shots have been fired. Nebuchadnezzar, your kingdom cannot last. And you can't last until you acknowledge the biggest thing of all existence, the rule of God, the only God. We had earlier in our service some words of personal experience told us by a 20th century man, Charlie Knoll. Well, here in Daniel 4, are also words of personal experience preserved for us from the 6th century BC. Amazingly, it takes the form of a state document because it begins there in the beginning of chapter 4 with the words of Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, to the peoples, nations, and men of every language who live in all the world. It's a state document, and not many state documents find their way into the Bible. But here's one that does. Chapter 4, then, verse 1 and 2. And he goes on to say, it is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. Me. Like with Charlie earlier on. It's personal. Here's a personal experience, a personal witness from a very prominent figure of history. Personal witness that, first of all, heaven speaks. In one sense, of course, the great despot Nebuchadnezzar believed already in various types of deity. He knew about Serapis, and he had a gigantic temple dedicated to the god Belus, or Bel, the lord of the air. There it was on the banks of the Euphrates, this enormous temple, rising terrace by terrace up to its central altar with all its palaces and subsidiary temples dedicated to Nebo and to Sin, the moon god, and Mylitta and Samas and others. Names gigantic, ladies and gentlemen, in their own time, but they were destined to be swept into oblivion by the advancing witness to the God who has spoken and revealed himself supremely in his Son, Jesus Christ. Christ has obliterated all those names. In chapters 2 and 3, Nebuchadnezzar has, metaphorically, taken his hat off to God, the God that Daniel and his friends worshipped. Even though as captives, they were still under Babylon's rule. Nevertheless, he acknowledged, and it was a tip of the hat to Daniel's God in those opening chapters. Now here in chapter 4, he's become a worshipper. And it's because of yet a further dream that the faithful Daniel is interpreted to him and that has all too obviously been fulfilled. Heaven spoke to me in that dream, declares Nebuchadnezzar, as he recalls what he saw in the first 18 verses of chapter 4. This time not a metal image, but a vast tree of cosmic proportions, productive, protective, and seemingly permanent. But then, verse 13, from heaven there descends a holy messenger. So it's heaven who's speaking. A messenger with loud instructions to demolish the tree, strip it, reduce it, a tree that in verse 15 becomes, actually, a person. Suddenly it becomes, let him be drenched with the dew of heaven and live with the animals and be given the mind of an animal. With one purpose, verse 17, that it may be made clear to all that God, the only God, called here the Most High, is universal, sovereign, and is recognized as such. So heaven spoke in that dream, says Nebuchadnezzar, and he pays tribute to Daniel's interpretation that the tree is Nebuchadnezzar, and that unless he changes his egocentric lifestyle, he will lose control of his mind and eat grass like cattle, verse 25, and that there'll be no restoration until he acknowledges that, to use his words of verse 26, heaven rules. We'll come on perhaps a bit later to the nature of this strange condition. Heaven speaks. That's the first piece of personal testimony from Nebuchadnezzar. And it's significant that God isn't tied to one mode of communication. God accommodates the dream and vision culture of those days in Babylon and speaks to Nebuchadnezzar in that way, the powerful ruler. Last Sunday night, somebody of Islamic background was telling us at his baptism here of how God spoke to him as he compared what he'd read in the Quran with the Bible, and that is how God normally chooses to speak through the scriptures, through the Bible. But I've also known of Muslims, a number of Muslims, and indeed people of other faiths whom God awakens to the supremacy of his Son Jesus Christ and to his dying love through a vision or a dream. It's often happened in today's society in Kuwait or Egypt or the Sudan or Nepal. The gist of the message to Nebuchadnezzar through Daniel was, verse 27, renounce your sins. After all, he'd been guilty of thousands of murders. He'd seen some people done to death there in Jerusalem in a most terrible fashion. Daniel knew all about it. Daniel was emotionally close to Nebuchadnezzar. He'd risen to prominence in his kingdom. He knew he was a captive. And yet there was a fondness, a love for this despot, a yearning that he would get right with the God of all the universe. Renounce your sins, however, he says to him boldly in verse 27. And in one way or another, down the generations, the personal testimony of countless people who have turned to God is, heaven speaks. Sometimes it takes the form of somebody saying, it was as though God was speaking to me personally as I read that book or turned to the scriptures or as I listened to the message being explained. Noel Tredinnick, who's so prominent in the music work of this church, is at present in Ontario working with Dr. Billy Graham, referred to earlier in our service. And Dr. Graham, I gather, was speaking last night in Ontario and had a wonderful packed stadium. And as Noel said on the phone, thousands upon thousands of people making their great decision to follow Jesus Christ and to be active for him and to pledge their lives to him. Well, it's a wonderful thing when it takes place, but when it happens, it's always individual. The person isn't just part of a great mass hysteria. They're saying, God is speaking to me. Heaven spoke to me through what I read and what was being explained. Heaven speaks. Secondly, heaven waits. It's strange how it happens, but there's a time and a place for different people when it comes to us being arrested by the message of God to turn around, to stop living for self, and to come under his forgiveness and rule. Nebuchadnezzar had been on the throne for 40 years when he received these visionary messages from God. You might say, Mr. Preacher, why didn't he receive them earlier? Maybe the answer is that his mind wouldn't have been predisposed to receive them. in an earlier year. Heaven can wait sometimes. It doesn't mean that heaven isn't working, but there are moments when heaven waits. I think of a man who spoke to you in the choir when you had your house party some couple of two or three weeks ago, Vijay Menon, who's from Kerala in India. He's also spoken to the students here. He's a friend of this church. He often comes here. Vijay Menon. I knew him when he was a brand new believer in Jesus Christ. And he said to me at the time, he said, I can't understand how it was that I became a Christian just like that. One day, I walked into a church, a Hindu. 40 minutes later, I walked out, a Christian. And up to that time, I'd never even seen a Bible. He said to me, I don't understand how it could have happened like that. But he said, somebody must have been praying for me, but I don't know who it was. Years later, he got his answer. It was his landlady. He'd been a single man in lodgings, and his landlady was a believer. And she prayed every day for Vijay Menon. She said, I hadn't got the courage to speak to him personally about faith. I was very timid. But I thought, I will pray every day for Vijay Menon. Then she recruited two more people, a husband and wife, and said, would you pray for Vijay Menon? They said, sure. They'd never met him, but they said, we'll pray for him. Every day? Every day. Then the landlady died. But the two went on praying. 7 years they kept it up. Every day, may Vijay Menon come to acknowledge Jesus Christ in his life. And one day they opened their Challenge newspaper magazine, a little Christian paper. They saw a smiling brown face on the inside, and the caption was, Why I Am No Longer a Hindu, by Vijay Menon. They realized their prayer was answered. They got in touch with Vijay, of course, immediately. Then he said, I knew who it was. But all that time, 7 years of praying, heaven can wait. And then there comes the moment when it's right. God speaks and acts. And the person receives the message and said, God spoke to me. Has it happened to you? Then there are moments when it's right not to wait, when we know that God has spoken. I think of a man who lived in Tunbridge when my father was vicar there. Some years back, and Dad one day in a sermon was saying, not all that many people make the great decision to follow Christ as they get older in life, because he said, you get in your rut, it's not so easy to change your ways. He said, not many people after the age of 50 take that great step. Not many. Later that day, a man came to him in the vicarage and said, I want you to know I have become a Christian today. Dad said, well, that's wonderful. How did that come about? He said, I'm 50 tomorrow. Heaven waits, and yet it won't wait forever. What has God been doing all the time while we've been going about our business or living off our own batteries and forgetting about God? Is God active? He's active. But it seems as though God has also got the opportunity to wait and work simultaneously. So it was, it seems, with Nebuchadnezzar. All those 40 years while Nebuchadnezzar was reigning, head of the world, president of everything, all the time, heaven was waiting. The answer is therefore that he is working all right, but heaven is content to wait for the right time, the right book, the right personal contact, the right service, whatever it is. Heaven waited for Nebuchadnezzar, and after the message had been received, he had a further 12 months leeway to get his life into order and to turn to the God of Daniel, but he didn't make use of the time he was allotted. It's very typical of many people to quote from the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. The same thing happens, he said, to becoming a Christian as to all radical cures. One puts it off as long as possible. Well, a few years ago I was preaching at a service, and I remember at the end of it, the lights had been turned out of the church, I was about to go home, and suddenly three students came back into the church. They said, we got as far as the bus stop. Then they said, we looked at each other and said, we got to go back. He was talking about receiving Jesus Christ. He was talking about the cross. He was talking about how Christ has died to forgive us our sins, and we'd done nothing about it. We just went out into the night. They said we felt we had to come back. We want to make the decision now before leaving it any longer. 5 years later, I met one of those students. They said, remember that night when we came back? I said, of course I do. Well, it's a wonderful thing when we are arrested like that and when we don't wait. Heaven speaks, testified Nebuchadnezzar, and heaven waits. That was his experience, but heaven couldn't wait forever. There came a point when the waiting stopped and the action began, and that's the third facet of our little study. Heaven acts. 12 months passed by for Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months when he could have taken the opportunity to come to terms with the God of all the universe. But instead he strutted. So we read in verses 29 and 30 of Daniel 4. Posterity tells us of the unequaled city of Babylon with its 300-foot high walls, walls that were 75 feet thick. The enduring river Euphrates flowing right through the city majestically. The legendary hanging gardens of Babylon, you must have heard of them. They were the wonder of the world at that time. And topping everything off was the palace. In some secular literature that is available to us, Nebuchadnezzar is quoted as saying, I have adorned no part of Babylon, that city which is the pupil of my eye, as I have the palace. That is the house which commands the admiration of men. It is the central spot of the country, high and elevated. It is the house of royalty in the country of Babylonia. It stretches from, and he mentions a number of rivers. He goes on, silver, gold, metals, gems, nameless and priceless, objects of rare value, immense treasures have I heaped together to ornament that tower, that abode of my majesty, which contained the treasures of my imperishable royalty. That's from secular literature, outside of the Bible. Imperishable? All that the Bible tells us is that as Nebuchadnezzar strolled onto the palace rooftop, his comment was, verse 30, is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? And then follows the description of the voice from heaven. Yes, it was heaven acting. Heaven acts. Then the madness that came upon the world's most powerful ruler, and the dream is fulfilled, and heaven acts. And you say, what was the illness? Well, it's been apparently a recognized illness in medical history, described as a rare form of monomania, a condition, it is said, in which the sufferer is deranged in one particular significant area only. The particular form of monomania, in this instance, has been described as monomania, has been described as boanthropy, a rare condition in which, as it occurred for Nebuchadnezzar, the sufferer, why he imagined himself to be a cow or a bull. A contemporary writer of the last few years describes a case that he was acquainted with in 1946 in a British mental institution. The patient was in his early 20s, in excellent bodily health, but spent the entire day at that institution, out of doors, wandering around the lawns of the establishment, regularly picking up and eating handfuls of grass. The writer observed that the only physical abnormality consisted in a lengthening of the hair and a coarse, thickening condition of the fingernails, and that without the modern institutional care that, of course, he was receiving, the patient would have exhibited exactly the same symptoms as those described in Daniel 4, verse 33. Professor Randall Short writes in similar vein, and so does Dr. Monty Barker, who is a psychiatrist, who has visited us at All Souls Church. So the condition, so they tell us, can evidently right itself. So it was in the case of Nebuchadnezzar. And the whole episode, he is enabled to to accept as the occasion when heaven acted and God changed his outlook and his life. It seems permanently for the rest of his life, which was only 4 years left. Actually, it doesn't take much, not really much, to alter the epicenter of your life and beliefs, or at least to make you question it. It only takes a blip in the shares index for some people, or the sadness of bereavement as it hits us in our own circumstances, or we wake up one day in the coronary care unit, start asking ourselves questions about our whole basis for living and what life is for and how we're going to spend eternity and where we're heading for. Nebuchadnezzar is one of the supreme examples of history of people who can seem to have it all, to be looked at, adored, worshipped even by millions of people, and still not have their life together. You can be supreme in the area of sport, wealth creation, social prominence, and communication in the media and the arts and acting, but be in your own persona and self-integration a disaster. There are so many illustrations. Think of the Caesars those years ago. They were all-powerful, even godlike. More than one of them was called Dominus et Deus, Lord and God. One was killed by his own son. One went mad. One went blind. One was drowned. One was strangled. Two committed suicide. Five were assassinated. Eight were killed in battle. That's the Caesars, top men of their day. We can duplicate that in our own day. Of course we can. I know a man called Rabindranath Maharaj. I met him in Amsterdam the first time. He was a guru in his own place. Worshipped, people would come and bring him their votive offerings. He said one day he knew there was a missionary couple praying for him. But one day he said, as an old woman came and brought her offerings, was about to present them to him as a guru, he said, God spoke, Rabindranath, you are not God, I am. And the shock was so great, he dropped the offerings that he'd been given and ran. Began his search. He knew there were people praying for him. And one day he went to them and said, I have become a Christian. And he wrote a book. We got it, I think, on our bookstore. Death of a Guru. Well, here is the death of a potentate. And we say to ourselves, don't wait for the moment of truth, even if heaven seems to be waiting, because the truth is that God has already worked in saving love on our behalf, supremely, of course, in Jesus Christ, who has visited us in our predicament of alienation, unforgiveness. He's accepted in his sacrificial death the responsibility of our rebellion against the rule of heaven, our rebellion that would otherwise shut us out of God's love and eternal purpose forever. Heaven has spoken. Heaven is waiting and has been waiting for us ever since that day on the lonely hilltop when the Son of Man died that terrible death on our behalf to lift off us the guilt that would otherwise have driven us out of God's love and into darkness. Heaven has spoken. Heaven is waiting. Heaven acts to move us in a myriad of ways, to challenge us and bring us to the point of renouncing selfish egotism that so enwraps us, and to change us into embracing the love of Christ, and to usher us towards the mindset that became Nebuchadnezzar's when finally he conceded that, and with this I end, heaven rules. Heaven rules. Verse 34 and 37, with which I began. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven. My sanity was restored, and I praised the Most High, honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. And then I, verse 37, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right and all his ways are just, And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. It may have been a limited testimony, but it was a testimony. He didn't know about Christ, but he learnt about God and his rule and his acceptance of even Nebuchadnezzar. That's the last we ever hear of Nebuchadnezzar. He died in BC 561 after 44 long years of rule. This is one of the great messages of the entire book of Daniel, that there were to be these four great empires: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and then Rome, succeeding one after another. Some of them went in a single night. Babylon went in one night. Rome went in one day, 410 AD, August the 24th. One day, Rome was sacked, and that was the end of Rome. All of them to be just the background for the emergence of the kingdom that was to be eternal. A kingdom with no armies, no taxes, no power base, but centering in the figure prefigured by the stone that smashes every kingdom into pieces in turn and supersedes them all. It's a person, ultimately the person of Jesus Christ, once crucified, now raised from death, and by his Spirit ready, waiting to come into the lives of all who will acknowledge his rule over them, over us. Heaven speaks, heaven waits, heaven acts, heaven rules. But ultimately, the rule is to be in life after life after life, person after person. Hundreds of us have stepped into that. Every story is different. You heard one of them tonight, Charlie Knowles. But they're all different. Some of them happen suddenly, some of them happen slowly, some of them happen as a person joins the Christianity Explained group and says, please explain it to me slowly, let me just take it in. It works differently. And the last reality is that heaven rules. So that those of us who have come to accept the rule of Christ in our lives and have accepted forgiveness forever at his hand, do sense that our lives at last are making sense. We come to the center of all things, and no longer do I rule. There's a new king. Would you underline that, those of you who have made that decision before? Underline it afresh on this Sunday evening. And those of us who have yet to make it a reality, take courage. You're among friends in an atmosphere of worship. No one is going to get at you. We'll stick around at the end of the service. You can have your coffee first if you like, but I'm going to just stay here at the front of the church when the service is over. Come and have a word with me, either right away, or get your coffee first and then come and have a word with me. And I'll give you a little book. Here's my book. I wrote it myself. It's called A New Beginning. You can take it away. It's got a little prayer of commitment somewhere tucked away in the middle of it that you could make your own. A prayer not unlike Nebuchadnezzar's. If you want to go a little bit further and ask questions about our Christianity Explained group, take that service order with the hymns on it. At the very back, you'll find a little piece you can just tear off. Find a stub of crayon or a ballpoint and just stick your name in there if you'd like to. Pop it in one of our... We've got some red pillar boxes at the back of church. Just pop it in there. And Rico here, my colleague, will just find your name there. He'll make sure that he can get information to you about our Christianity Explained course. But you can just arrive. There's no heavy duty about this. There's no special technique either. We just know from the book of Daniel that heaven speaks, waits, acts supremely in Christ, and rules. And he beckons to us now and says, this is the moment, this is the time, let's not wait any longer.